The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Here's some good news. The American people are giving Joe Biden an F, even as crowds at sports games around the country are giving him a big FU. Here's why I'm cheering for this guy to fail. Parents opposed to leftist indoctrination are pushing back against the DOJ's effort to target them. Can Taiwan be saved? And I ask that especially considering the current set of clowns running U.S. foreign policy. And I'm going to begin today my examination of Madison and his big idea that there are really two types of tyranny to watch out for. The tyranny of the one, but also the tyranny of the many. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
It is customary for people to say, and sometimes even conservatives to say, well, you know, I don't like Joe Biden. I didn't vote for Joe Biden, but, you know, he's the president, and I'm rooting for him to succeed. Well, I'm rooting for him to fail. And I'll explain. There's some really good news on this front. But before I get there, I do want to make a correction from the podcast yesterday. In talking about the dividedness of America, I talked about a majority of Republicans who say, yeah, maybe it's time to secede, and a substantial minority of Democrats, 41%. And then glibly, because my brain must have temporarily shut down, I added the two numbers and goes, that adds up to 90. That was obviously a simple math mistake. I want to acknowledge these mistakes up front, correct them. So there we go. I misspoke. Now, back to Joe Biden. Seems like the American people are giving Joe Biden an F, even as crowds around the country, all over the place at different types of sports games, are giving him the big FU. It's kind of fun to watch. I mean, I don't approve of the word, but the sentiment is coming out of just public frustration and just a desire to sort of hit back at this guy. Now, the good news I'm talking about comes from the Quinnipiac University National Poll. This is one of the sort of standard pollsters. And now, of course, whenever I talk about a poll, I should strike a note of caution. People will say to me, I know, hey, Dinesh, the polls are notoriously unreliable. The polls are notoriously biased. And by the way, the Quinnipiac poll is a very liberal poll. This is a liberal polling group. And so I would say, yeah, it is biased, but biased how? Well, when you say polls are unreliable, they're not unreliable in all directions. They're unreliable in one direction. They always fall on one side of the aisle. So in other words, what they do, they're consistently wrong in overestimating the support of the Democrats. And what that means is that if these poll results are right, Biden's situation is even worse than the Quinnipiac poll itself would lead us to believe. So I think this is a very interesting poll. It's a poll of 1,326 U.S. adults surveyed in early October this month. Very small margin of error. And here's the good news. Biden has a 38% approval rating. 38% approve, 53% disapprove. He's hit the lowest rung since his presidency, and I think he's going to go even further down, probably to zero. Obviously, when I see these numbers, one question that runs through my mind is, who's the 38%? Who thinks that the crazy uncle coming out of the basement with his staccato outbursts is doing a great job? Well, the American people as a whole do not think that. And this is, again, a poll that breaks it down on the issues. And this is very illuminating for Republicans as we kind of gear up for the midterms next year to know where exactly Biden is most vulnerable. So here we go. On the coronavirus, Biden actually has relatively even support. 48% approve, 50% disapproved. Now, there's not one category in which his approval is more than a disapproval, but at least in coronavirus, he's almost at a tie. The economy, 39% approve, 55% disapprove. His job as commander-in-chief of the military, 37% approve, 58% disapprove. Taxes, 37% approve, 54% disapprove. Foreign policy, 34% approve. I mean, think about this. To get 34%, you're losing a lot of Democrats, because if you divide the country right in half, you would expect that one half would be by and large critical. So we're not surprised by that alone. But you think the Democrats would be behind Biden. But clearly he's losing independents. He might even be losing some Democrats. Taxes, as I said, 37% approve, 54% disapprove. Foreign policy, 34% approve, 58% disapprove. Immigration, 25% approve, 58% disapprove. And the border, 23% approve, 67% disapprove. So what this shows you is that immigration, the border, this is the number one issue in which Biden is extremely vulnerable. Now, by and large, when the Democrats picked Biden, the idea was, well, you know, people may not always agree with him, but they like him. They identify with him. He's a calm, rational leader, unlike Trump. But what's interesting is as this poll goes down into Biden's personal traits, you see that he's getting an F there, too, and perhaps an FU there, too. He cares about average Americans. Now, again, this is the only one on which Biden is running in about a tie. Half of the people say yes, half of the people say no. And I think this is really where, as conservatives, we need to work, because I don't think Biden does care about average Americans. That was his point about, it's been 5 days, why are you talking about Americans we left behind? So what? Biden gives you this idea that ultimately, he's just one of these, like, cranky, angry old men, where he's basically said, I've had life, I'm done with life, and now it's like, me. I don't really care what anyone thinks. What I like about this, Biden is honest. 44% say yes, 50% say no. Obviously, the 50% are right. Biden has good leadership skills. 41% yes, 56% no. And this is great. Is the Democratic administration competent in running the government? 55% no, 42% yes. So to be at 42%, that means that you may have most of the Democrats, but you've lost pretty much all the independents. Now, another silver lining, or at least another bright light in all this, is we sometimes think like young people are left-wing. They've been kind of propagandized by their professors, and all of this is to a degree true. But when you look at, I was fascinated as I dug into the results of this survey, you find that it breaks it down. It breaks it down into, and now I'm going to give you just a couple of results from just adults 18 to 34. So this is the younger cohort. Do you approve of the way Biden is handling his job as president? 38% approve, 53% disapprove. I read the wrong number. 36% of young adults approve, 48% disapprove. Do you approve of Biden's handling of the economy? Young people, 35% approve, 55% no. Foreign policy, 31% approve, 55% no. And then finally, the border, 20% approve, 64% disapprove. So the young people are even more hardcore in bashing Biden on immigration. Now, one thing I do find strange is the way the Biden administration appears blithely indifferent to these results. They are brazenly unconcerned. You get no sense that they're calibrating how their policies are being received, that people are pushing back, that there's parental resistance, there's public outcry, it's reflected in public opinion itself. It's almost like these guys go, you know what? We've got the system fixed. We've got the rules of the game rigged. We control the election process. We control the media. We can impose digital censorship. We have the FBI. If necessary, we can call out the military. It's almost like the attitude of a ruling class. We are the rulers. You are the ruled. You don't know what's good for you. If you don't like us, that's because we're giving you bitter medicine that you don't want to swallow. It's the aristocratic attitude that doesn't care what the peasants think. The basic idea is the same one as Marie Antoinette. Let them eat cake. Guys, I want to challenge you to become a MyPillow super shopper, just like Debbie and me. We don't just patronize MyPillow, we go all out to support Mike. I noticed Mike was trending on Twitter today, And we're happy to support Mike because he makes great products. Now, Mike Lindell wants to make it easy for you to be a super shopper. How? By giving you great deals across the board. For example, Mike's offering a buy one, get one free offer on the Giza Dream Sheets. And he's also offering various discounts, but up to 66% off on other products. All the MyPillow products, by the way, come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. To get the discounts, you got to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. How are parents responding to the Biden administration's targeting of these parents, a mobilization of let's have meetings between the FBI and law enforcement agencies. Let's see if these parents pose a danger to school board officials and teachers. Are these parents intimidating? Are they threatening them? Are they domestic terrorists of one kind or another? Of course, the whole idea is preposterous. Even in the letter that was sent by the National School Board Association, this was to the Biden administration saying, listen, we teachers are really scared. We school board members are really scared. You need to mobilize and get law enforcement on this. The question becomes, what examples could they provide that these parents pose this massive threat? And when you have to look at the fine print, the footnotes, in fact, and you realize their examples are like downright stupid. In one case, they say that a winery entrepreneur, a guy named John Tiggs, was arrested after he yelled at his school board in Loudoun County, Virginia. So he was arrested for yelling, evidently. Then they say that there was a, quote, unruly crowd of parents in Spotsylvania, Pennsylvania, at a school board meeting. Unruly crowd? What did the crowd actually do? How unruly was it? Was it just parents basically expressing their discontent? They're unruly. We need to make sure that we tamp them down. And then they talked about protesters who, quote, disrupted a school board in Poway Unified School District in California. Again, disrupted how? Disrupted in the sense that they raised objections, they spoke out of turn, and the school board had to adjourn. Is that what disrupted means? Or are they talking about physical disruption? You can see that this is what the left does all the time, is they conflate terms, and they use incendiary language, which gives them the implication that the parents did X, whereas in fact, it may well be that they did Y. Now, there's a woman named Asra Nomani in Fairfax County, Virginia. I'm going to try to get her on the podcast, but she's the leader of one of these parents groups. Her group is called Parents Defending Education. This is a very smart woman, Asian Indian, by the way. So we're not talking about this is not a white supremacist. This is a former Wall Street Journal reporter. This is somebody who's taught at Georgetown. She's president of a strategy firm, and she's mobilizing parents around the country. Now, she has an article in which she talks about the fact that, well, first of all, I love this. She posted on social media. She goes, I taped a message to the National Association of School Boards. I'm what a domestic terrorist looks like, meaning I'm an ordinary parent. You want to come get me? Come get me. And she goes, you owe parents an apology. We reject violence. But what she knows, and she, in this article, Asra Nomani says that the real goal of this is to get parents to back off and to scare them, to get them to watch what they say and don't show up and not, maybe I shouldn't be so active and I want to have a normal life. But Asra Nomani gives example of Stacy Langton, who was, by the way, a parent in the Fairfax County schools. And this woman stands up before the school board and she reads just examples of pedophilia, of child porn, all this disgusting material that's in the school library available to children as young as 12. And the school board is like squirming, you know, you're out of turn, you're out of time. So that the school, it's interesting, the school board doesn't say, whoa, wow, thank you. Thank you for pointing out to us. We had no idea there's all this filth that we are promulgating through public education. We'll immediately look into it and stop it. No, they see her, the whistleblower, if you will, as the problem. And what they don't like is all these parents then stand up and shout, shame, shame, shame. So this is the threat that the Biden administration is trying to shut down. In a sense, what Merrick Garland has done this attorney general, this guy, by the way, we're really happy you're not on the Supreme Court, you fraud. But anyway, he's issued a declaration of war on American parents. Of course, this woman, Stacey Langton, was not threatening anybody. But what you have here is parents are being pushed up against the wall. And Nasr Nomani talks about her own experience. She goes, I know that when I started speaking up, I started getting pushback from the schools. The school board president yells at her, go back and sit down in your seat. There are now 160 of these parents groups around the country. They're a big threat to the teachers unions. They're a big threat to racial indoctrination. They're a big threat to trans indoctrination. And by the way, a little tidbit, Merrick Garland's daughter is married to a guy who does what? He's a consultant. He's a co-founder of a group called Panorama Education that provides, guess what, critical race theory consulting services. To whom? To schools. So these guys, and this is the swamp, there's always money in it somewhere. So it's partly ideological and it's partly monetary. I mean, these people are kind of filthy. They're filthy from the top to the bottom. And it's typically on more than one level. The really good news for me is that parents, by and large, are pretty tough. And they're very tough, moms are, when it comes to their kids. They become very protective. They become, you know, the lioness. Debbie here is like nodding vigorously. And so I don't even think that the threats of the U.S. government, all this bombast, and that's mostly what it is going to deter parents from being active. And what I suggest is parents, you know what? There's no need to yell. There's no need to what you should do. Don't just take on the school board. Run for school board. Displace these losers on the school board so you become the school board. That's kind of how the left took over education. They took over the seats in the departments. They took over the departmental chairs. They became the presidents of universities. And with effort, and it's going to take a little bit of time, we need to do what they did. We need to take our institutions back. Aches and pains come to all of us eventually, whether from normal wear and tear of time or from injury. Now, you have the choice to feel trapped by aches and pains, or you can fight back against them. The tools are different now than they were a decade or more ago. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation that is the source of aches and pains. Now, about 70% of the over 500,000 people who try Relief Factor order more. Why? Because it works for them. You have nothing to fear and everything to gain. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? Typically, advertisers send us their products, and both Debbie and I try them. Debbie's been suffering with this frozen shoulder for a couple of years now, and well, she tried Relief Factor, and wow, to her amazement, 2 weeks later, she could lift her arm. Not only could she lift it, but it no longer hurt. Well, she got busy and forgot to order more, and unfortunately, the pain came right back. So now, Debbie has a resolution. She'll never be without Relief Factor again. We also had her Aunt Karen try it, and it worked so well that we have now purchased a subscription for her. You can benefit too. Your first step to becoming pain-free just might be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246. Feel the difference. The injustices of January 6th, and I'm talking here about the treatment of the January 6th protesters, is really evident for anyone who has eyes and a conscience to see. So to me, it's almost a Rorschach test, a bell, a kind of a measure of whether or not someone is able to look clearly at what happened, is able to apply a kind of decent, even-handed calculus. And even-handedness is the heart of the matter. When I think, for example, about Ashley Babbitt, and I think about the reasoning that was given to defend the Capitol Hill police officer. Well, you know, he was protecting people. Well, you know, they were coming through a window. Well, you know, he didn't know if she was armed or not, but she could have been armed. Well, you know, it's his job to be armed and to use his weapon when he's in the line of duty, when he's facing any kind of confrontation or any kind of threat. Wait a minute. If you take those exact same considerations and then apply them to any other protest going on right now in Portland, and let's say a Portland police officer just draws his weapon, bam, 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 Why did you kill all those people? Why'd you kill all those? Well, you know, I'm doing my job. Well, you know, I have my firearm. Well, you know, I didn't know if they were armed or not. They could have been. Well, you know, this guy was coming through a window. So the exact same rationale would never fly. I mean, there would have been a massive uproar. And when I think about Ashley Babbitt and I think about the fact she had three things going against her. One, she was white. And so the idea is she's obviously a kind of presumptively a white supremacist, even though her agenda had nothing to do with whiteness or white supremacy. Her agenda had to do with counting votes and had to do with other issues, patriotism. And so number two, she was kind of working class. And so from the left's point of view, she's not only white, but she's too dumb to apologize for being white, kind of like those sophisticated white kids in schools who like kiss the feet of Black Lives Matter activists. You know, Ashley Babbitt didn't know to do that. And three, she was a Trump supporter, which is basically, there we go. That's it. What else do we need to know? So because of these things, these were her real, you may say, crimes. And that's why it was okay to treat her that way. Now, there's a profile here in American Greatness by Julie Kelly, who else, of the prosecutor in charge of the January 6th investigations. Remember that when we talk about these injustices, they're done by people. And although they're done by the Biden administration collectively, there's usually some guy, some thug with a badge, who's actually pushing this forward. In this case, the thug's name is Channing Phillips. And this is a guy, by the way, and we know we can raise the issue of even-handedness with him alone, because just this year, this acting attorney for the District of Columbia dismissed a case against a Black Lives Matter protester. He was charged with attacking a police officer. And think about it. There are January 6th defendants who have done nothing, taken a selfie, sat on a chair, paraded, walked around, that are in confinement. But this guy was let go. Now, why was he let go? Channing Phillips dropped the charge because the defendant's lawyer, think about this, said that the facial recognition technology that was used to identify the suspect was racist. Why? Because the facial recognition technology included skin color among the factors that it was using to match up. Is this your face? And so this guy, Glenn Ivey, by the way, a high-priced lawyer, all these Black Lives Matter guys, they have like, while the January 6th guys are struggling to get a public defender, to get basic representation, these guys have top-notch attorneys, left-wing radicals who are representing them. And in this case, the left-wing lawyer, Glenn Ivey, is a guy who, well, just happened to work with Channing Phillips in the 1990s. In other words, these guys were working in the same place. They knew each other most likely. And so this is, again, the swamp in action. These guys are buddies. It's like, hey, listen, you know, I got this guy, you know, I'm going to say it's racist, but maybe you can then give him a break and let him go. And this is how it works. This is all the behind the scenes, wink, wink type of justice. So this guy who is ruthlessly going after now, I think there are 650 active criminal cases. This is a guy, by the way, twice appointed by Barack Obama to temporarily fill the position. Here's a guy who's worked with Holder. He's worked with Loretta Lynch. He's one of the worst. And this is a guy who has been not only making sure that anyone charged, remember, not convicted, of any kind of violent offense is locked up, but even people charged with nonviolent offenses have to remain behind bars, as he would like it, until their trial. I mean, think about that. And so prison terms for offenses, this guy's go for offenses like what? Quote, parading, demonstrating, or picketing in Congress. One would think that parading, demonstrating, and picketing would be seen as expressions of democracy. Yeah, sure, you shouldn't be in the Capitol building, but at the very least, you're trying to get your voice heard. Is that something that requires you to be locked up for months in a way, destroy your reputation, destroy your family, make you unemployable for that? This is the same guy, Channing Phillips, who's blocking the release of 14,000 hours of surveillance, claiming that it's, quote, sensitive, even though what's sensitive about the main part of the Capitol building in which tourists go and look around and take photos every single day. So what you have here is something really terrible, which is the misapplication of justice, an uneven-handed application of justice. This guy, by the way, is the acting U.S. attorney. I don't know if Biden will put him up for confirmation, but if he does, I really hope that 50 Republican senators, in a single voice, vote thumbs down. When Debbie and I talked to Dr. Howard, the founder of Balance of Nature, he said, guys, you're a long way from being healthy if you aren't eating enough fruits and veggies in your diet. He said, try Balance of Nature. Just see how it makes you feel. Well, let me tell you, we both feel great. We have lots of energy to get us through our busy days. We take 10 daily servings of the fruits and veggies, all in 6 small capsules. They're absolutely no trouble swallowing, always fresh, nothing artificial. They smell great. And Debbie swears by the fiber and spice. Finally, I'm taking it also. We are both really liking it. Invest in your health. Invest in your life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code AMERICA. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code AMERICA. I'm starting to see news reports saying that, you know, inflation is coming down. Inflation is fading. And I'm thinking to myself, is this really true? This is not my experience. But let me take a closer look at the data. And when you take a closer look at the data, you see this is not, in fact, the case. The federal government just released the latest personal consumption expenditures. It's called the PCE index. That's their preferred metric for measuring inflation. So over the last year, August 2020 to August 2021, 1 year, inflation 4.3%. Now, you have to remember, this is very high by recent historical standards. In other words, this is the biggest annual surge in inflation that we've seen since 1991. That's 3 decades ago. And sometimes you have liberal economists who say, well, you know, food and energy prices are a little volatile. It's not fair to count them in inflation. Well, first of all, I think it is fair because they're the baseline of any family economy. Energy prices, food, I mean, that's basically how you get through the day. But nevertheless, even if you take them out, inflation is at 3.6% over the past year. We're seeing, by the way, jumping about 1/3% per month. Again, that's the highest on record since May of 1991. Again, about 30 years. So what is inflation? Now, I think most of you understand it, but it's basically an erosion of purchasing power. Here's how an economist, Peter Jacobson, puts it. He goes, the average consumer making the same salary this year has taken a pay cut when you consider what that paycheck can actually buy. So that's what inflation does. The same amount of dollars now buy fewer goods. Why? Because those same goods are more expensive than they were a year ago. That's the meaning of inflation. If you have 5% inflation and you have $100 to spend, in a sense, you have $95 to spend because 5 of that has been eroded by inflation alone. Now, the Federal Reserve initially made some solemn noises. Well, you know, this is a very temporary problem. But now they're beginning to admit that this is not so temporary. This is something that they might be wrestling with for some time. And it was also a problem, by the way, that was blamed on so-called bottlenecks and supply chain problems. Now, these problems are very real. And by the way, these problems are caused by a kind of excessive, not just American, but global lockdown. And so you've got ships that can't move and ships that arrive in ports and they aren't being offloaded. The merchandise isn't being offloaded. And so places are out of all kinds of stuff. And obviously, when you have fewer supplies and equal demand, what do stores do? They raise the price. And so this is how the bottleneck issue produces inflation. But let's remember that the main cause of inflation isn't bottlenecks, it isn't supply chains, it's the Federal Reserve. Why? Because the Federal Reserve has been printing money like there's no tomorrow, to quote one of Debbie's favorite phrases, like there's no tomorrow. And they've created essentially trillions of dollars out of thin air. Why? Because when you think about the government doing all this spending, where'd they get it? I mean, you'd think they'd have to come take it out of our pockets, but they're too smart to do that because they know that will immediately get angry public resistance. So they achieve the same goal. It's taxation, in a sense, without passing a tax increase. What you do is you print the money. And so you dilute the value of the dollars that are already in your pocket and mine. And so what's happening here is that although inflation is a, quote, funding strategy by the Fed to fund the excesses of the federal government, It is you and me, it is ordinary American families that are really paying the price. I've just been talking about inflation, the problem. So what's the solution? Well, there is a solution for you. Inflation, as I mentioned, is running hot right at the highs of the last couple of decades. Now the Dems are pushing through another massive spending plan. They want $3.5 trillion. Well, money doesn't grow on trees, even if our government thinks it does. If you're freaked out about the impact this additional spending is going to have on already high inflation, well, it's time to protect your savings now. Diversify a portion of your savings into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. If you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with the precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. I spoke yesterday about the military danger facing Taiwan, military danger coming from China. And this is an appetite for aggression on China's part that has been encouraged by the massive failures of the Biden administration. Well, I suppose on virtually every front, but most notably in the area of Afghanistan. The Chinese concluded that if the United States, this big army, this powerful nation, this big noisy presence on the world stage, if this country can't beat a group of 14th century tribesmen, over a 20-year period, it retreats with its tail between its legs. The tribesmen then take over Kabul and are kind of laughingly sitting in American tanks and jovially exchanging cigarettes while serving large amounts of American weaponry and Americans still left behind. The Chinese go, wow, can you imagine what's going to happen to these losers when they take on the People's Republic of China? We have more than 1 billion people. We have nuclear weapons. We have massive technology. We have a tremendous amount. We have an Air Force and massive army, bigger than probably the population of the United States. So these people don't have, well, they have the means to fight, but they don't have the will to fight. And I think with regard to the Biden administration, this would be a correct assessment. Now, the head of Taiwan, a woman named Tsai Ing-wen, who was elected 2016, has an article in the current issue of Foreign Affairs where she talks about Taiwan. And she makes the point, I think a very important one, that this isn't just about Taiwan. It's, you know, the West sometimes thinks, wow, you know, this is Afghanistan. Well, you know, let it go. It's Hong Kong. It's far away. Let it go. It's Taiwan. It's still a long ways away. Let it go. But the point that Ing-wen makes is that Taiwan is important not only to the region, providing a kind of critical stability, allied, by the way, with a lot of countries that are our friends in the region, places like Australia, places like South Korea, places like India. So this is the alliance of countries that would be essential to block Chinese aggression and Chinese imperialism in the Asia-Pacific region. But she makes the point, Ing-wen does, that this is also part of a bigger struggle to see whether or not the liberal democratic system in the world is going to prevail, or what she calls the authoritarian system. She doesn't use outright the word communist. She doesn't talk about the totalitarian communist model, which really is the Chinese model. They aren't just authoritarian in the normal sense of the term. I mean, you've had caudillo dictatorships across Latin America and South America over the past many decades. Those are authoritarian governments, but they don't try to actively control the lives of all their citizens. They don't run surveillance on the whole country. They don't say things like, you can't practice your religion without my consent. But the Chinese do. The Chinese actively are establishing and have established a totalitarian regime stretching over across more than 1 billion people. So that is the issue. Which model is really going to prevail? And Taiwan, she says, Ing-wen, is an embarrassment to China because it's Chinese people. But it's Chinese people who have created a bridge between China and the West at a time when China is pulling, retreating into a kind of internal nationalistic fervor. Here's Taiwan, and these are Chinese people, as I say, who speak Chinese, but there are many languages spoken in Taiwan. They have democracy, they have opposition parties, they have free speech. So they have a lot of the same things that you find in Western countries, although they're sometimes, we see, increasingly jeopardized in the West. And Taiwan is also very advanced in terms of technology. It's got one of the world's leading semiconductor industries. It makes computer chips. It's active in high-precision manufacturing, 5G, biotechnology, artificial intelligence. And let's remember that Taiwan has been for decades now isolated in the world. Taiwan is not in a lot of these international organizations and bodies. Why? Because China has put pressure on these international bodies and said, listen, there's only one China, and we're it. So they have pressured these international groups to go, well, yeah, okay. And so Taiwan has been literally left out in the cold. But despite being left out in the cold, it has been an integral part of this global world of ours. And it's been, you would have to say, a good actor. It's an economic powerhouse. It respects human rights. And it's doing a lot to protect itself. So the Taiwanese are not just throwing up their hands kind of in the traditional victimology mode, help us, you know, there's institutional bias against Taiwan. No, we need affirmative action. No, they're saying, listen, we will do our part. If the Chinese try to do something to us, we have surface-to-air missiles. We've got a very active way of undermining their attempts to try to take over the island. We're going to make it very difficult, very costly for them. But we also want help. And hey, America, if you want help, we want Australia to help, we want South Korea to help, we want Japan to help, we want India to help. And I think that this is a case where there's a kind of a window here where the Chinese may feel that this is their moment to take Taiwan. And it's the great responsibility of the Western, of the civilized, of the liberal democratic coalition of countries to say to the Chinese a resounding no. Just a few weeks ago, one of America's leading nonprofit law firms, this is the First Liberty Institute, asked patriots like you to sign their letter to help stop President Biden's radical scheme to pack the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, since then, more than 250,000 people have signed and tens of thousands are joining their coalition every day. Franklin Graham, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, Dr. James Dobson, the Family Policy Alliance, the Heritage Foundation, they're all on board. Look, if we don't stop the radical left from installing four more justices so they can rig the system in their favor, it will end the rule of law as we know it in America. Please sign your name now, just like Debbie and I have. Go to SupremeCoup, that's COUP.com to sign First Liberty's letter. Once again, that's SupremeCoup.com, and may God bless America. I haven't yet watched the new Dave Chappelle Netflix special. It's Debbie goes, thank goodness. But I'm actually dying to watch. I'm eager to watch. I watched the last one. I laughed my head off. It had some, I mean, you know, it's uneven, but there's a lot of great material. And in an era, we live in one of the, at least from the last 30 years, I think this is one of the unfunniest eras in American life. And you can see this just by surveying the comedians who are out there. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel, it's hard for me to crack a smile. Jimmy Fallon is even worse. This guy has a smug look on his face, like, I'm cool. But that's kind of all he's got going for him. I'm really surprised he's actually has a national show, this guy. Stephen Colbert. This guy's funny. He's a legend only in his own mind. And this is a guy who probably laughs inwardly at his own jokes. I don't see too many other people laughing. Trevor Noah. I mean, this guy is basically some kind of a race activist masquerading as a comedian. So, Bill Maher is probably the best of that lot. Why? Because occasionally, sort of once in a year, he'll say something, he'll take on radical Islam, or he'll challenge the left, and usually quickly retreats after he does that. But nevertheless, he's at least bold enough to do that. And the fact that we have to give thanks for Bill Maher when he does that is a sign of how bad things are. I think the only people who are really challenging leftist orthodoxy. And the reason that there's so much comedy to be had here is because when something isn't orthodoxy, it becomes a natural target. There were a lot of jokes about sexuality in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. Why? Because there was a taboo surrounding that. And so that became the natural target for humor. And so political correctness is the obvious target for humor, but the comedians are too scared to do it. And Chappelle's latest special, as I say, I've only been following the reaction to it. And the reaction, of course, makes me a little more eager to even see it. Because here's a guy, he's being accused of being homophobic and he's being accused of being transphobic. Now, apparently, Dave Chappelle decided to address the issue of this rapper, DaBaby, who was apparently attacked because he had offended the LGBTQ community. So this guy's been not totally canceled, but sort of canceled because of his LGBTQ misdeeds. Now, Dave Chappelle makes a point. He goes, wait a minute, this guy DaBaby? He shot and killed a 19-year-old man in North Carolina in a Walmart in 2018. And now I'm going to quote Chappelle. Nothing bad happened to his career. Do you see where I'm going with this? In our country, you can shoot and kill an N, but you better not hurt a gay person's feelings. That's Chappelle. He's talking about a real anomaly, a real double standard. And he goes, and this is precisely the disparity that I wish to discuss. So the cleverness of Chappelle here is he's criticizing the emphasis on sort of LGBTQ and trans sensitivities, but doing it from the point of view of a black man. He's using, you may say, one form of totemic protection to take on another form of totemic orthodoxy. And then he goes on also to defend J.K. Rowling. And he makes a point, again, this is not even necessarily comedy, this is just straight out common sense. He goes, gender is a fact. Every human being in this room, every human being on Earth, had to pass through the legs of a woman, he's being a little graphic here, to be on Earth. So what's funny is that when this kind of commonsensical assertion, indisputable, follow the science, that's what he's doing. Nevertheless, you've got all these groups, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. Dave Chappelle's brand has become synonymous with ridiculing trans people and other marginalized communities. And they say that audiences don't support platforming anti-LGBTQ diatribes. We agree. And here's another guy, actually never heard of him, but his name is Oni Blackstock. Oni Blackstock. And he goes that Chappelle's transphobia and lack of understanding. He says, you know, it's critical for us to understand intersectionality and how black cishet heterosexual men, despite being marginalized for their blackness, can perpetuate systems of oppression. So I love the fact that Chappelle is not deterred because he's gotten this heat before. And a lot of people would run from it and say, well, you know, this time I'm not going to do it because it's going to flare up again, you know, kind of like a bad case of herpes. But I think Chappelle's view is, you know what? Let it flare up. I'm Dave Chappelle. I'm doing a comedy special. I'm making people laugh. You're not. And so if you want to attack me, go ahead. But I'm going to be laughing all my way to the bank. Can you have too many towels? The answer is no. Debbie and I, well, we can't have too many towels, and we just can't stop ordering MyPillow towels. We've replaced our towels with MyPillow towels all over the house, and now Mike Lindell has a special that we can't pass up, so we're kind of going crazy and ordering more for us and our family. Towels just don't seem to dry you that well anymore. A lot of them feel soft and lotiony in the store, but you take them home and they don't absorb. Why not? Because typical towel companies import the product and they add softeners that make the towels feel good, but they don't dry you very well. Now, Mike Lindell has solved this problem. He created the best towel company right here in the USA. MyPillow has proprietary technology to create towels that don't just feel soft, but actually absorb and leave you feeling fresh and dry. MyPillow towels come with the MyPillow 60-day money-back guarantee, and for a limited time, Mike is offering a ridiculously good deal on his 6-piece towel set. The towel set includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths, all made with USA cotton, soft yet absorbent, regularly $109.99, but now, for you, $39.99. Call 800-876-0227 or go to MyPillow.com, but make sure to use promo code Dinesh. I want to speak today about James Madison and Madison's view of democracy. Now, as many of you know, today in America, we sometimes have this kind of semantic or verbal dispute about, is America a democracy? Is America a republic? And very often, that argument becomes like two ships passing in the night. You don't get a lot of clarity out of it because it's not explained in what sense are we a democracy? What kind of a democracy? We're clearly a democracy in some respect. We're a constitutional democracy. We're a democracy that places severe limits on what the government, the elected government, can do. We're a democracy that protects minority rights. As we'll see, Madison is very interested in, not, in fact, he devised a number of these systems for the U.S. Constitution. But let's begin by noting that when we use the term democracy, we are talking about representative democracy. Representative democracy as contrasted with, well, you'd have to say original democracy. Original democracy was direct democracy, rule by the people. The people themselves show up and rule. Now, admittedly, this was never perfect even in ancient Athens and the Agora, for example, even though there were about 40,000 citizens in ancient Athens in the 5th century BC, about 8 to 12,000 would show up and actually cast their vote. And of course, the vote was prohibited to women, and there were obviously no votes for slaves. The American founders were very ambivalent about Athenian democracy. I'm now quoting Madison from the 10th book of The Federalist. He describes democracy as mob rule. He goes, democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. This is not the prose of an admirer. And ancient Athens, even in its glory days, does fit this description. Let's remember, it was the democracy of Athens by a vote of its leaders, and of course by a jury vote, that put perhaps the greatest philosopher of all time, Socrates, to death. For what? Philosophizing on the streets of Athens. So when we sing the praises of majority rule, and these days we hear a lot about democracy, the Republicans are against democracy, voter integrity laws against democracy, but nobody asks, why is democracy a good idea in the first place? Why does the majority have the right to rule? It may seem obvious that it does, but let's think about this. Let's say you have a large country, and it is adjoined by a small country. Do the citizens of the large country, because they are more numerous in number, they're more numerous, do they have the right to rule the citizens of the small country because there are more of them? I think most of us would say no. So why should the majority have a right to rule not just over itself, but over the whole society, making decisions not just for the majority, but for the minority, which is then compelled to conform to it? Let's say, for example, the majority makes rules that discriminate in its own favor and against minorities. Let's just say the majority decides we're going to have a 10% tax rate, but the minority, the other 49%, they're going to have a 90% tax rate. Should the majority be able to do that? Let's say the majority decides to confiscate the property of the minority. Let's take their house. Let's take their yard. Let's take their cars. Should the majority be able to force the minority to build their houses in a certain way or to pay for everybody's college education or to purchase healthcare at prices that are set by the majority itself? I mean, I'm giving examples to clarify a point, and some of these examples aren't all that fanciful. They're actual proposals by leftists that, yeah, we can pass laws that do this and do that. We're perfectly happy to force the rest of the citizens to go along with us. And this is supposed to be not just an exhibition of power, but some kind of a moral ideal. Now, in his major discussion of faction, this is from the Federalist Papers, Madison makes it really clear he disapproves of giving the majority this kind of unlimited power. He doesn't think that there is a moral ground, just because you're more numerous, to tyrannize over everybody else. And in discussing factions, a faction is kind of a power group that is selfishly pushing for itself. Madison says there are really two types of faction. There are majority factions, and there are minority factions. So the country is full of minority factions. There are people who want this benefit for themselves, and people who want that, and union people want more wages, and employers want government subsidies, and this place wants to build a bridge and increase its employment. And so all these people are pushing for things. And Madison is worried about those factions. He's trying to figure out a way to limit their ability to raid the public purse. But he's most worried about majority factions, and for a simple reason. Madison says that a minority faction can always be squelched by the power of a majority. The majority can always vote against, no, you want that bridge, it's a useless bridge, the bridge to nowhere, no one's going to cross over it, no, we're not going to fund it. But Madison says, who is going to curtail the power of the majority? So here we have a startling idea from Madison, because when we think of tyranny, we think of tyranny historically as coming from the British crown. It comes from a monarch. And we think of the people as the solution. We've turned over power from the one to the many, from the ruler to the people. But, says Madison, and but say the American founders agreeing with them, there are in fact two types of tyranny. There's the tyranny of the one, and there's the tyranny of the many. The tyranny of the many, the founders by and large called tyranny of the majority. And the tyranny of the majority in some ways is even more terrifying than the tyranny of the one, because first of all, it exerts its power over a larger reach of society. And second, because it has so much backing, it gains a certain kind of moral force. The tyranny seems not only an exertion of power, but an exertion of right. And so what Madison says is we need all kinds of arrangements in America that will check the power of the majority itself, that will check the power of the people. So the American Constitution is simultaneously an expression of the people's will through representative government, but it's also block and tackle mechanisms to slow down, check, and in some cases, totally frustrate. And we're seeing this now in this battle over the infrastructure bill, ways in which the Democrats are really frustrated. They feel that democracy itself isn't working. Well, democracy is working. It's working the way the founders intended. They intended to block and tackle and frustrate you guys. And it's kind of nice to see that even though some of our constitutional mechanisms we've moved away from, others remain in place. And the architect of that, I'll continue to talk about this, and I won't talk about it Monday. Monday is Columbus Day. I'm going to do kind of a special on Columbus. I'm going to do the importance of Columbus. But then I'll pick it up on Tuesday and show how a lot of the block and tackle mechanisms of the Constitution and of our system of government were put in place by one James Madison. Guys, we're going to do a question today, and we have a video question. So let's take a listen.
Hi, Dinesh. I'm Emmanuel, and I'm from Canada. I am a fan of your podcast. It is very informative, educative, and entertaining. It is filling the knowledge gap in my education, and I thank you for that. I love the USA because she is the embodiment of liberty and freedom. Obviously, the Democratic Party of today is utter America. What they do and say were virtually to the destruction and the downfall of America and the loss of our liberty and freedom. It seems to me that they are acting a script given to them by some puppeteer masters behind the scenes. My question to you are, who are these puppeteer masters? What are their objectives? How may we defeat them and save the USA and our liberty and freedom as we know them today? Thank you, Dinesh.
Well, I'm delighted you're enjoying the podcast. I'm thrilled that it's a source of entertainment and education and insight. Those are the three things I try to bring to the podcast. And by the way, please, guys, if you can share my podcast with others, I'd really appreciate it. I'm trying to just expand my reach. This is already one of the biggest podcasts, but I'd like it to be even bigger. I'd like it to reach more people. Now, turning to this notion of the man behind the curtain, who is the real puppet master? There's no doubt that a guy like Biden is being given a script. Biden has sort of decided to throw his lot in with the radical left, and the radical left, not one person, but a group of people, are supplying him with the agenda. They're telling him things like, listen, this is what you should do on the border, And it sometimes becomes embarrassingly evident when they even say to him, like, listen, don't take questions from this guy. No questions. Oh, you're out of time. They're whispering this stuff in his ear. And he sometimes, you know, he's the crazy uncle, blurts it out. Oh, am I out of time? Oh, do I have to leave now? So he kind of blows it by showing that he's not the guy who's calling the shots. Now, that being said, I think it's a mistake to assume that there is some particular hidden group. No, what you have here is a very powerful class of people. And they are spread throughout the society. There are many of them in powerful positions in academia. There are many of them in the media. They're in government. They're in the deep state. And what they do is all these groups work in concert with each other, each supplying what it does best. And so the legal guys supply legal strategies. This is how we can block the efforts to audit Maricopa. And then the academics go, this is a way that we can take things that don't seem racist, like colorblindness, and let's call that unintentional racism. So the academics do the coinage of terms. And then you've got guys like Brian Stelter and Wolf Blitzer, and they're basically the wholesalers who come up with nothing, but essentially blast out the messages that they pick up from academia and from the left through the media. And then you've got the actors and the Hollywood community. So this is a case where you've got powerful interests allied with each other, ideologically allied, but also allied in terms of their own gain. Their own gain, because to the degree that they can displace the entrepreneurs, to the degree that they have a centralized society, who has all the power? They do. Because if this power is concentrated in one place, then if you are one of the planners, if you will, a guy like Obama, who would be essentially, I mean, think of Obama in an entrepreneurial society. This guy is not capable of producing any kind of a widget. He wouldn't know how to make a pencil. He wouldn't know how to get a tree to grow out of the ground. He's useless in terms of the normal pyrotechnics of a modern technological society. But he is a very cunning and sly tapper of envy. What he knows is how to, he's a community organizer, which means he's a resentment organizer. So even as I depreciate and expose these people, I'm not without admiration for the skills that they have. They're diabolical skills. They're skills that are being deployed toward a bad end. But we have to admire the way that they fight harder than we do. They organize better than we do. In some sense, they're more in it for the long haul than we are. It's taken them a long time to take over these institutions. That's been the fruit of a 30, in some cases a 50-year struggle that they've engaged in. So these are people who believe. They're like the Taliban in a sense. They believe in their principles. They worship their own Allah, which is the state. They're ruthless and determined, like the Taliban, and they're determined in the end to hold their own version of Kabul, which in their case happens to be Washington, D.C.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.